This is the multi-sport podcast for triathletes, duathletes, sportive riders, road racers, time trialists, runners, mountain bikers, and fitness enthusiasts.
Whatever the event and whatever your distance, this podcast aims to make you smarter and faster.
Okay, so it is the 3rd of February 2013. I'm sat in the centre of Club La Santa, and I'm very pleased that I've bumped into Phil Graves, who's out here training. Hi, Phil.
Hi, you all right?
Yeah. You're known as a triathlete, but people don't get born as a triathlete. What was your background? How have you come into this sport?
Well, originally I was a swim runner, believe it or not, you know, nothing to do with cycling at all. Yeah, I've been swimming since I was really, really young. I think it's just one of those things that every parent sort of wants their child to be able to swim. Yeah. So, you know, I had lessons from an early age, and once you get your 25-metre badge, then you want to do your 50-metre badge, and then all the way up to 1,500-metre badge, and I don't know how it is today, but we used to have like a gold badge, silver badge, you know, yeah. Stuff like that. So we did all that, and then when I finished that, you know, I still seemed to enjoy it, so they moved me into from a teaching section to a training section more when I was about 8 or 9 to the local swimming club, York City Baths Club. And from there I moved into the top squad when I was 11 or something, and I've been in the same squad now for the last 12 years. And when I was 12, 13, I got some national times swimming-wise, which then that was the thing to get, you know, when you're 12, you know, the whole big thing in the swimming club is who's got the national times and stuff like that, but okay. I managed to get there 2 years, and then running-wise, I just started at the local athletics club when I was 8.
Okay.
And just did some fun runs, under 13 fun runs, and then into counties, and then just came from there, really.
Okay. And was it something that, I mean, was there a particular trigger person or race or something that you kind of went triathlon?
Actually there was a guy from the local tri club, it was called York White Rose Triathlon Club, his name's Richard Wasling.
Right.
He came down to this little Iron Kids thing that one of the local gyms was having, and my parents decided, oh come on, you're off down to this, you know. And he said, oh, you're quite good, you know, you should go on a triathlon taster day. This must have been 2000, and this was 2003, with Jack Maitland and Simon Ward, who were doing a little taste day. And from there on, they had a little aquathlon at the end of the taste day. And I got invited on a series of winter triathlon camps with Alistair, Johnny, and the whole crew back then, Dan Brook and everyone. And then in 2004, I did my first sort of proper triathlon race and qualified for the European youth relays that were in Italy, and that was my first ever trip abroad, first wow. time I'd left the country, yeah.
Right. So triathlon immediately opened up doors.
Yeah.
Wow. So that, you know, there's been lots of instances where you've, you know, since appeared in magazines, won races. There's obviously a career development that happens, but you come into a new year like 2013. What are you thinking for this coming year? I mean, what sort of things? Obviously, like most people that listen to the podcast and most athletes, actually, it's not fixed in stone, but there's some things that you want to do. What do you kind of see this year being?
I've got the first like half of the year planned out. I'm going to go to Abu Dhabi and hopefully have a good race there. And then I'm going to have a solid training block back home. And then come back here to Club La Santa for the Volcano Triathlon and then the Ironman. But I'll go home between the two, even though the two are only 3 weeks apart. And then after that, I'm not really too sure. I mean, I'd love to go and do Ironman UK again.
Right, bit of recovery after after Lanzarote.
Yeah, yeah.
How long does it personally take for you to recover for an Ironman? I mean, how many days does it take for you to get back into training?
As a guide, after I won Ironman UK in 2009, 13 days after that race, I did an Olympic distance triathlon race.
Yeah.
And it was fine. And I mean, the last mile on the run, that was a bit emotional. And then I had another week, and then I did a 100-mile time trial. And that 100-mile time trial was one of the best races I'd ever done. I rode 3 hours 33 which I think at the time was about the 14th, 15th fastest time ever recorded in the country.
Was that a nationals or just a...
An open event time trial. So obviously, I think it just depends how hard you have to go and how much mentally it takes out of you. I think if you win a race and it takes a lot shorter time to get over it than if you, you know, do badly and come for, well, not feel like you've done well or hit your expectations and you're a bit disappointed. I think.
Did you feel in the form of your life at that point? I mean, did you realise how fit you were?
When you're in that sort of period, you never really realise how fit you are. But then when you look back on it, you think, yeah, actually. God, I was absolutely flying then, you know. Right. I wish you could get back to those sort of levels of fitness, but we'll get there, there.
And do you have a way of measuring that in a quantitative way? Is there certain sessions? Are you a numbers guy or are you a sessions guy? Which thing gives you the feedback to say you're ready to smash it?
I'm a very basic numbers guy, to be honest. Right. I like my time trials. Yeah. So, you know, when I know I'm riding certain times in certain races or like I have special routes I do at home.
Yeah.
There's a good little bit of road where I can do a time trial anywhere from 30 kilometres all the way up to 85 kilometres. And I've got PBs at all those. So when if I go and ride it, and I know. But the problem is now in the UK, the road surface is getting worse and worse every year. So it's pretty hard to try and think like, oh, how much, you know, it's, especially my little 30k time trial, it's so rough now compared to what it was 3-4 years ago, because we've had so many bad winters. But you just get to know how you sort of feel, and especially this is why I like doing the 100-mile time trials, because it's a very, very measured effect, and everybody sort of races each other, so you can say like, oh, if he beat me by such and such 3 years ago, you know, and I'm here now, I know where I am.
And how do you in Ironmans or time trials, how do you pace judge? How do you know what's the right mark to be at in terms of how much effort early on? You know, the first 25 miles is the easy bit. How do you measure that? How do you quantify that when you're on the bike?
Just feel normally. Like when I won Ironman UK, I just sort of felt that I set off hard and just went hard all day. And never really let up. Nowadays in my older age, I just try and think. Somebody wrote in a magazine, if you're going hard in an Ironman, if you feel like you're going hard in an Ironman, then you're going far too hard. If you feel like you're going medium, you're still going too hard. So I just try and start off easy, and if I'm pulling time out from people behind, then that's, you know, excellent, really.
Yeah. So you're not a heart rate man or power man?
No, to be honest.
You've got that inbuilt metronome. You know what your muscles are telling you.
Yeah, well, most of the time. that's what you hope, anyway. No, I just think that on race day, there's so many things to think about. When I'm riding an Ironman, like, I hardly ever look at my clock to clock my watts or anything, because I'm forever looking at, like, where's the wind coming from? Where's the fastest line on this bit of road? You know, if there's a pothole there, you know, if I'm lucky enough to be in the lead, you know, like, where's the, like, lead car or lead motorbike? You know, if that's there, you know, where can I get the most shelter? You're forever thinking about all these different scenarios, and you're thinking, right, it's time to drink, it's time to eat, you know. You hardly have ever time to look down.
But you do have what's there. It is there, but you just don't use it all the time.
Well, no, I don't have what's.
Oh, right, okay.
Well, really, I don't have a sponsor who's given me a watt, like a power system to really use, to be honest. That's probably why I don't really use it. Mm. But yeah, I think a lot of the time as well, like, I had a friend who recently broke his collarbone. He's obsessed by watts, obsessed by it. And I wrote a blog in Tri Plus about it, actually. It was like, I really couldn't understand how he managed to hit this speed bump in Spain and fell off and broke his collarbone. But when I was out riding with him, as soon as he gets to the front of the group, he's head up, head down, looking at his watts, up again, down, forever looking at his bike computer to make sure he's doing his watts.
Yeah.
And, I mean, even in that group snout, it's so unsafe.
Yeah.
Even when you're by yourself, you know, you're like, oh, I'm feeling good, you know, and when you're doing 30 mile an hour, you're shifting. And if you're looking down and you spend 2 or 3 seconds looking down thinking, oh, wow, I'm doing 300 watts, you know, anything could be up the road, yeah, and bang, down you go.
That's 36 metres.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of age group athletes just need to be careful, really, about spending too much time looking down at the computer, like even taping up your wattage numbers and stuff like that, so you're not forever looking at it, because it's a danger, not just to yourself, but if you're riding in a group, you know, it's a danger to everyone.
Yeah, yeah, very true. So you're out here.
Yeah.
What's a typical day? What's a typical Phil Graves day? Come on, from the point you open your eyes.
Well,
what time's that?
7:30 usually here.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it's
just getting light now, isn't
it? Yeah, straight down to the buffet. The only place to be.
Yeah.
Absolutely lovely. And then usually you try and get a ride in early-ish before it gets too windy. Because some days here it can get really windy and really unrideable, to be honest. So a typical day here would be probably about three to four hour ride,
right.
Usually. Just steady away, really. You can use the geography of the island to your advantage. And
yeah.
I particularly like to, when there's a massive tailwind section, I tend to like to do a bit of overspeed and just push on there. Because
yeah.
I think a lot of people just plod along, whereas it's nice to get that bit of like time trial effort, you know, feeling good, feeling like, yeah, wow, yeah. I'm doing 60k an hour on the flat, you know, it feels really good. Yeah. And we'll get back, have some food. Then in the afternoon, you know, when the sun's at the highest, we'll probably go to the pool,
yeah.
Do a swim session of about 4 to 5k, get a nice bit of tan,
yeah.
Come back, and then in the evening it'll be running, probably an hour, something like that, and then straight into the gym to do some stretching, and then go and hammer that buffet again.
Yeah. So do you tend to do that as the sequence of events, as a general thing? Is
yeah. Well, obviously yeah. It can vary day to day and stuff like that, and obviously it depends on the people that are down here. Because
yeah.
I like to just sometimes I like just to mix in with them. Like yesterday, I went on the bike with Michelle Vesterby, and we did just over 5 hours because we're both doing Abu Dhabi and did some very very hard efforts in there. So. Obviously, that was like the main thing of the day. And obviously, it takes a few days to recover from a massive effort like that. But you just got to be sensible, and you know, when you feel like people are there to help you, push you along, you know, you say, I'll come with you. But then other times, you know, you've just got to say, yeah, I'm just going to keep myself to myself today. And you know, I'll see you in a few days, you know, when I'm can come out my shell again and give you another good smashing.
So what? And I know this is going to depend on the week, but what's a good swim bike run volume for you? You know, what week do you sort of feel has been, you know, that's your target that you'd like to attain?
Oh, I'm quite a big trainer, but I do a lot of stuff easy. I tend to get a lot of good bike form just by running really easy. But usually 35 hours would be a perfect week. Swimming wise, we've just got a new swimming coach at York City Bass Club who's really, really good and really switched on, and he's splitting the squad up into a few different sections, so we now have a specific long distance group, so the sessions there will be 6 to 7k most, like 4 times a week, with a sprint session on a Tuesday. So swimming wise, I'll be at 9.5 hours. And then running wise, I'll try and keep it consistent, you know, an hour most days with a longer run on a Sunday. And then riding wise, obviously it depends what other people are doing around in York. But usually longer rides on a Wednesday and a Saturday, and just trying to just keep legs turning round the other days. The thing is, I love my riding.
Yeah.
And where,
I can tell that from how you talk about
where,
it.
Where I live, you know, to be honest, I've never been anywhere better for riding. It's not that the fact, like, in Lanzarote here, we're blessed with good roads and beautiful weather, but there's not the quantity of roads. You know, there's a few roads across the island, but, you know, you can ride all of them in a week.
Yeah.
Whereas running at home, you know, there's miles and miles of different roads to ride on, and, you know, there's nothing better than just pedaling, just nice and easy, you know, just looking at the countryside.
Mm. Is it a hotbed, that area, for time trialing? Does that feed your sort of bike passion?
Especially around Hull, we have the A63, the V718 course, which is the fastest.
The Mecca. How many was it last year? 25 people broke 20 minutes on a certain 10?
Oh, it'd be more than that. I think last Easter, the Good Friday 10 is the one to do. And there'll sometimes be 40 people that go sub 20, and like 10 that go sub 19 or something. It's that good. But obviously it depends on the weather, to be honest. But yeah, that's literally like 25-30 minute drive from our house. So it's nice to go down there early season and do some races just to test. But as the season gets on, you know, doing a 10-mile time trial, you know, it's not really too beneficial. So we tend to go up north on the A19. There tend to be a few more 25, 50, 100-mile time trials. I mean, there's so many races between within like an hour in the car. Like, you could race. You could race 3-4 time trials a week and not have to drive further than 45 minutes away to do them.
Do you do, because obviously the bike you can do quality and recover faster. Do you pick out run races to get you to run faster as well?
Yeah, or? I mean, I do like doing some cross countries, but that's what I'm definitely looking into this sort of year, is to try and just get the, because there's not such a strong really run group in York at the moment. So I'm going to try and utilise some of the local running races. I mean, there's plenty of them around. Just get the, I'm sure you have a Southern running guide, but not we. We have a little Northern running guide that gets published every 3 months and has all the lists in there. So it's just a case of picking one of those up and having a look. Yeah.
But is it something where, because of the sort of bike being, you know, something that you love, will you have to sort of force yourself into the running?
Like the bike, like the time trial, and it's like, it's my hobby, you know. First, like some people have stamp collecting or, you know, collecting coins.
Yeah.
That's my hobby. So
have you just got the new handbook then? Have you seen it?
Well, I've ordered it. I ordered it before I came, but I've been here 3 weeks now. So hopefully it will be sitting on the toilet, sitting there when I get back. I'll say I did an interview just before this, and they said, "What's your favourite try item?" And I said, the cycling time trials handbook is awesome toilet reading. Could you sit there and read all the times from last year and look at all the records and think, like, oh, back in 1964, somebody from my cycling club, you know, held the national 100 record, you know, for like 2 years or something.
Yeah.
It's incredible. And it's so historic, the sport, something that triathlon really doesn't have at the moment. You know?
Well, I haven't got the handbook, but I have got the DVD. If you want me to, really? I'll give it to you.
Oh no, the best bit of the year is sitting down at the start of the year with a highlight and highlighting all the time trials you're going to do, and then printing off 10 entry form sheets and writing checks and posting them up and say, yeah, God, that's 10 days of complete pain that I'm going to have to put myself through, but I love it really.
Okay, so when you're here, do you use any parts of that? You know, we've got some good stretches of road here, and there's good climbs. Do you use any of those as key sort of, you know, timed efforts or anything?
Not really, to be honest.
Just time in the bank, is it?
Yeah, especially when you're here, because the weather can vary so differently. I know the main obvious thing is to do a time at Tabiesco, but the tailwind can vary so much from day to day, and it's almost always a tailwind up there that you can't really, I mean, you'll be able to wattage wise, but you can't really measure it, and especially if you're like in a group or by yourself. Yesterday we went out and rode from Orzola along the flat road and did an out and back just to keep it a bit flatter. So that's one good way of getting in a lot of miles. But yeah, you usually just come here just to log the miles, and then when you get back home, it's time to do some more specific sort of train and get on those like little time trial routes that I test myself on and see what happens.
Yeah, and that's your easy way of sort of being tempted into high intensity, is you kind of get a time and you get a session. You kind of do both of them.
Yeah, I have a lovely little bike route actually. I took my friend out on it the other year, 140 kilometres from York. It's all pretty main road, from York all the way to the coast of Bridlington, up to Filey, and then back to York, and we did it in something like 3 hours 40, 140 kilometres, really, really, and it's got 1,000 metres of climbing on it. Perfect little testing session, and you're forever pushing as well, and because it's on quite major roads, you've got cars coming past, and it's just good, I wouldn't say a habit, but just good experience, just to use the draft of the cars as it comes past you, so you can just press that little bit further on, so you're forever just pushing on that little bit.
Constant pressure, constant movement. That momentum of movement that racing requires, there's no let up, you're always going. So, races, let's say you go into, let's take it to the furthest scenario, the Ironman. Nutrition-wise, how, because so many people don't think about their nutrition in the race. They know it's there, they know there's aid stations, they know they've got two bottles on the bike, some for whatever reason, carry four bottles on the bike. But, you know, what's your sort of special plan that you try and stick to? Or do you vary it a lot? Or do you just go by the seat of the pants? How do you race?
Well, I've tried several things, but I'm lucky enough to be sponsored by Power Bar, who obviously do the best nutrition stuff out there.
And most of the Ironman events.
Exactly. It's good knowing that I can go to any race and you know what you've been using in training is what you're going to get on race day. So, you know, there's going to be no mishaps or anything like that. You know, the same strawberry gel that you take, you know, on your group ride on Saturday is going to be exactly the same gel that, you know, you pick up at mile 23 on the run.
Yeah.
You know? So, at the Ironman here in Lanzarote this year, I just wanted to do my own race, really, and concentrate on the nutrition. And I put 16 gels into a drinks bottle, and I purposefully took a gel every 20 minutes. And I felt that worked absolutely fantastically for me.
Yeah.
I stopped at halfway. The feed station is at the top of Hawea.
Yeah.
And I literally stopped, you know, stopped the bike, picked up my aid bag. There was a flapjack in there and some bottles. You know, put the bottles on my bike. You know, just ate the flapjack just over the top of the hill just to make sure that I'd got it and, you know, just that little bit of solid food. But yeah, gel every 20 minutes for me, and that works fine. I'm thankful that I know now at 23, you know, what nutrition plan I need to use, because athletes go years and years and years, you know, into their mid-30s, you know, not still experimenting with nutrition. Whereas I know now, like, for the next 15 years of my career, hopefully, touch wood, that, you know, that's, I'll probably use that for the rest of those 15 years, you know?
Yeah. Do you find that there's a sort of a point on the run where, okay, everyone gets to that gut it out point, and hopefully that's further down the road than the previous year and the previous race, but is there a point where you start really having to guess what your stomach is capable of absorbing? Because some people are great and they can do whatever, and other people sort of have this stage where they say, well, I just have to, you know, have the minimum to keep me going, because otherwise I'm just going to vomit.
I go into the race thinking that, you know, this day is going to absolutely destroy my body. Right. So it doesn't matter what I put in it, you know, even if I hate the taste of it by halfway through the run, you know, it's just got to go in, you know, like you hit the taste of Gatorade or Powerade or the gels, you know, even though they can get a bit sickly, you know, at halfway through the run, you know your body's going to get absolutely smashed, so you might as well just ram it full of, you know, rubbish.
And your body can absorb it?
Mine can. I'm quite lucky. I suppose it's all that Yorkshire water, you know, but... It's untreated.
Is the flapjack from Yorkshire though?
No, the flapjack's the sports bar in here. from the supermarket, sorry. So I'm just in that mindset that it's just gotta go in, you know. Even if it doesn't wanna stay in, you know, it's just gotta go down and it will be used, you know?
Yeah.
So there's no point thinking, ooh, that doesn't taste good, you know.
Yeah, it's not a gourmet, is it?
No, I mean, it's, you know, not.
it's not a gourmet buffet that you've been invited to.
You know, those guys wanting to do 12 hours in the Ironman, they're not there, you know, with plates of sushi, you know, like at 20 miles on the run, you know. It's just you just gotta get it down, you can get on with it, you know.
Yeah.
That's the attitude that I take, and you know, hopefully it'll get you to the finish.
And do you practice that? Because I've seen some stuff. It's actually done by a guy, Trent, who's a power bar sports scientist, and it's been published, and they've done stuff on marathoners, and they say that, you know, they're used to practicing every 15 minutes, taking 15 grams of carbs, and then they actually practice it. Do you have like a practice session for the run? Because obviously the bike is a constant thing, but do you practice a way of trying to see how your body can take it? Or do you wait or is it literally on race day?
Well, I sort of know now from several years that I know my body's going to take it.
Yeah.
I have done some sessions in the past which are purely like nutrition sessions, especially like when you're in the heat chamber. Before I raced Hawaii, I did a session in the heat chamber. I ran half marathon in the heat chamber and took a gel every 15 minutes, just mainly for the salt more than anything, just to make sure that I could do it.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I think a lot of pro Ironman athletes, the diets are just they're all about trying to be thin and, you know, got to lose weight and stuff like this, and they just don't eat properly. And, like, if you don't have any sugar in your diet, how on earth do you expect to get to race day, you know, whack down 20, 30 gels, you know, and your body to accept it, you know? Yeah. You've got to have a pack of Haribo, you know, every now and again, and some biscuits and stuff to get your... Else your body's just not going to get used to the sugar, you know? You can't go eating salads and then expect...
Yes.
Sugar overload can race day and everything to be all right, because it won't be.
Yeah, you know? Very. That's very good common sense. That, you know, people go sometimes too far down the, you know, as a friend of mine calls it, yogurt knitting. You know, it's far too kind of, you know, eco green sort of stuff. It's like, no, there's nothing wrong with biscuits and Haribo.
Yeah, exactly.
Your Ben and Jerry's and this, that, and the other. And I'm sure with you, at the volume of training you're doing, you can't eat that through salad.
You've got
to get the calories down.
Yeah. Well, it's to be honest, from my point of view, it's nothing to do with just being able to do the sessions. It's, you know, all these people just eating the salad, and then when it comes to race day, it's not happening for them.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, why is that? Or it's because you haven't had a gel in six. It's because you haven't had any sugar in 6 months, and you have a gel, and everything goes a bit funny.
Yeah. So is there a particular, if we call it a race ready session, that you do it and you just know you are absolutely on it, and you know you can race? Is there one particular? I don't know. It might be you know, a certain repeat in the pool. It might be a certain time trial that you do on one of your courses. Yeah. Or it might be something on the run.
I can sort of tell for every discipline, like if I'm going sort of well. In the pool, we've been doing some massive sessions, and the times that I've been knocking out have been the best ever, really.
Wow.
So I'm quite confident in that, even in January now, you know, we've been doing like 2200s in the pool, and I've been doing 220s like pretty comfortably, really. Cycling wise, obviously it's hard like early season to do some of those efforts. Well, mainly because the air's so thick, and in England, the difference in air pressure can just even make such a difference to the times that you do. But I can usually tell from my time trialing, you know, how things are going, and sometimes you just know that if you feel one with the bike and you feel that all the power's really going to that rear wheel, you know, that's when you want it. And running wise, there are a few sessions that I do. I do some 1K efforts down by the River Ouse in York. There's two bridges that are about 1.25 kilometres between them, and you can run 1K down one side, you know, easier the other, and then a K down the other. And you can do that so many times as you want. And I can usually tell, you know, if I'm going like 3.10s to 3.15, so my K efforts along there, that I'm pretty fit, to be honest. So,
yeah,
that's what I usually do. Taper wise, I try and just something I've started the past year is just to try and keep the training the same, just cut down the volume. So, because my body's used to doing the same things the same times during the week, there's no point saying, oh, I'm going to do nothing today, because the body just seizes up,
yeah,
you know? So if a normal week I'll do a 4 hour ride, maybe the week before the race I'll just cut it down to two hours. And just do it like that.
Yeah. Do you have in race week, do you ever have a really kind of, you know, because you might be travelling sometimes, do you ever have a pretty close to zero day where you
yeah, but that can't be avoided, and the way I get around that is by thinking that everybody's in the same boat, you know, everybody's had this nearly zero day, you know. Some people have come from a lot further away than I have, you know, probably done nothing for 36 hours or something, you know.
So you
just gotta get on with it like that and just think, you know, it's the same for everyone.
Yeah. One tip, if there was one, for the people, and there's shed loads of people now that are coming into Ironman that have just sort of woken up to this sport of triathlon. You know, where have you been? But, you know, they're coming in the droves, and it's great for the sport. But if there's one sort of piece of advice, which, you know, at 23, there's a wise head on those young shoulders, what would you say to them? And what would you kind of say, you know? Because obviously you don't want to do one and then say, oh, I did one. And, you know, what do you think would be a great bit of advice for people about, you know, doing this sport for a long period of time?
I'd say the first one is the easiest, because when you go into it, you don't know what to expect. And then after you've done one, you know what to expect, and they just get harder and harder. That's something I've learned anyway. The first one, you don't know, and you're not afraid, and you just go into it, and yeah, it hurts like hell, and you get around it, and you think, God, I'm never going to do that again.
Mm.
But you do, and then for your second one, you know what's coming, and you get quite nervous, and you think, oh, God, I've got to put myself through all that again.
Yeah.
And the other one is definitely just to build it up through the year. So, say if you were a British person trying to do a race, I'd definitely try and aim for something later on in the year,
right.
September Ironman Wales or Ironman UK, rather than something at the beginning of the season, because it's really hard to train through the winter and get ready for the Ironman in the UK. So at least it gives you all summer to train.
Yeah.
I mean, you might get wet through, but at least it's not out, not sheet ice or anything like that.
Yeah, like people that try to do New Zealand or some of the very early races. Just particularly the other side of the world, it's quite a hard scenario to try and
especially
do.
When you spend I couldn't do it, spend all winter training in the UK and then say, yeah, I'm going to do Ironman New Zealand, and travel to the other side of the world, not really too confident that I've done all the long rides that I need to do, so definitely just use your common sense. A lot of people just don't use the common sense. It's as simple as that. If you think it's right, it probably is. And if you think, maybe I shouldn't be doing this, you shouldn't be. And don't be scared to get out of sessions or knock it on the head. Like, if you've ridden half an hour from home and you're absolutely frozen, and it's -5, just think, is this the best thing for me, Because some of those sessions can set you back rather than put you forward. So, just use your common sense. Simple as that.
Brilliant. That's really good, because there's a lot of psychobabble and cybabble of forums and stuff, and you've hit the nail on the head. There's a lot of common sense stuff, which I think when you've been round a bit, you kind of can see it. But it's you know that when people make mistakes, you're like, at the time, did it not feel wrong to you?
They
sort of say, yeah, I didn't think this was right. It's like, yeah, so maybe if you listen to your intuition and your common sense, they'll kind of direct you towards, don't try and do a really early Ironman, or don't try and set yourself splits first time out, because you're probably not going to be able to even know what's coming up in that first
I'm a big believer in that nobody knows your own body better than yourself, The coach is telling you to do this, that and whatsoever, and you just don't feel ready for it or something, you've just got to speak up and say, look, I'm just tired today, or I don't feel I'm ready for that. If you're in a group, say, oh, work's been particularly tough or something like that, rather than just trying to do everything all at once and try and all fit it in, sometimes just got to say, no, I can't do that, I'm just going to go home, put my feet up and stuff my face and go to bed, and it'll all be fine in the morning.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. This is brilliant. We've done just over half an hour, and I've literally only felt like I've been here a couple of minutes. It's brilliant. It's just
hopefully the listeners will feel the same as well.
It's good. It's one of those sports where they can get direct interaction with somebody that's at the top echelons of the sport, and it's quite good for them to be able to hear it, because it comes across better than articles and blogs and stuff, because it's actually coming exactly as you said it. There's not going to be any cutting out, but we kind of slice it together and and you've said this, do a 100-mile time trial or something like that. You said, I never said that, they've chopped my voice up. But no, it's nice to hear the kind of common sense and the history of what you've done and so forth. And you're going to be around a while, so people people kind of already have seen you already, win races and be one of the UK's premier Ironman. And for me and everyone that's listening, good luck for 2013.
Thanks very much.
I might bump into you later on in the year in La Santa again.
Yeah, probably.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Phil. Cheers.